Welcome to Garage à Toi. Thanks for listening.
What's up, sister?
How's it going?
Marie, I'm just okay.
Just okay?
I hate that I get on every episode like this. Do you ever have an experience where you're having a conversation with someone and your soul leaves your body? specifically when you're in conflict with someone and you're thinking like, do I go apeshit right now or do I play it cool? And then you have to like double wrestle and say, you know, am I being true to myself if I play it cool, or am I don't know, not lying, but I don't know, I'm in a weird mood.
Hiding your emotions.
Yes. I feel like, I don't know, are you someone who fights very often? You don't seem like someone who's a fighter.
most people have described me as very even keel, like it takes a lot.
Yes.
Most people, probably besides my husband, would agree with that statement. He knows how to push my buttons.
Yeah, what scares me about you in conflict, specifically?
Yeah, I can get feisty, but then if it's too much, I'll just shut down. Like, I'll forfeit. I'll just walk away and be like, not worth it.
Mean. You walk away.
Like, I'll just go in another room, go, like, watch some stupid reality TV, just kind of unwind. Like, I have to remove myself from it, or it's just too much, like, overload, and I'm just, like, cannot process right now. Need to. Yeah. Need to shut down.
I used to be, when I was younger, I used to be a lot more willing to be mean. And now I'm like, I would almost rather die than get mean in conflict, because I feel like it just cost me so much when I was younger, because you really can't take stuff back. I feel good when you're saying it, but like once the gloves come off, I don't, you know, like OJ, the gloves don't go back on.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of things that can't be undone, OJ Simpson, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, Lord.
That got weird quick. how the heck are you?
I'm doing okay. I was a little anxious. Maybe because we took a few weeks off and like so many things have been happening in the world. So it's like, I was like, oh, where do we even begin?
I feel sorry for a little Marie and Anne on our last episode. Yeah. Because we were so excited about New Year's, and you know,
so
we're
hopeful.
Like
so damn hopeful.
And then what happened, Marie?
And then there's an insurrection at the Capitol.
What does that even mean?
Exactly. Okay. So I am one for people fighting for what they believe in, fighting for their rights, fighting for their livelihood, right? Like BML protests have been happening for years and have been met with more violence by police and other agencies, but haven't been mostly peaceful. So I did a little research, and it's reported that over 93% of BML protests are peaceful. Like, and they're still getting, people are still getting arrested and beaten and tear gassed and all these things. And I don't even want to go into the BML movement right now. I just wanted to demonstrate the stark contrast between a protest and this group of people who stormed our Capitol. They did so not to fight for their rights or their livelihood or protest police brutality and racial justice. They did so based on lies, like lies. They weren't even fighting for something. Like, lies told by our sitting president that we're fighting. These people were fighting for an imaginary alternate universe is what, how I like rationalize it to myself. It's like, because rational people realize and understand that Donald Trump did not win re-election. There was no evidence of widespread voter fraud. What anyone that stormed the Capitol on January 6th was there to do was to try to overturn a free and fair election, harm our Congress. They, you know, harmed police officers, and take selfies on the House floor. Like, really? So just in hearing all the news about it, like, one quote stood out for me was, "You're entitled to your own opinion. Everyone is entitled to their own opinion. You're not entitled to your own set of facts."
Ooh. Like,
we have to get back to the truth. And there's a, you know, the war on the press with Trump and the war on First Amendment, freedom of speech, like, it's just, it's all a mess.
It's chilling.
We need to get back to
it's
the truth.
It's absolutely chilling. And I agree with you completely, which is these people showed up specifically to disrupt the democratic process of governing. They didn't show up the day before. They didn't show up the day after. They showed up specifically to interrupt the certification of the election. That is not a protest.
No.
That is an attempted coup.
Right.
And it was bullshit. And I feel like that is where I land so often with this stuff, Marie. And I don't know if you're feeling this way too, but like, they're so pathetic. They're so pathetic with their entitlement and this idea that, you know, they were quote invited to be there. That's like the line that all the people who have been arrested, they keep using that same line. Oh, I was invited by the president. It's like,
right.
No, you weren't. Like, it's just so pathetic. And I was saying to a colleague of mine, and I know this is like the weirdest thing to say, but I couldn't understand how all of those people got there that day.
Right.
I was like, did they drive? Did y'all drive? Where are your cars? Like, what possessed you to take the day off of work and like head out to the Capitol and all
travel
these are coming
travel
out?
There. Yeah. Yeah,
a
exactly.
Woman who was shot, you know, they made this huge deal about, oh, you know, she was a veteran. And I'm like, that is worse. That doesn't make her somehow more innocent. That makes her worse. She was part of our federal government and she served in the military. That's not like, that doesn't make me feel better or like sad for her.
I don't remember the percentage, but some percentage, we'll put it up, were veterans or active military or police officers.
Scary. It's very scary.
If people don't see the thin red line there, I don't know.
I think you mean the thin blue line. Oh
yes. Oh, ba-dum-bum.
Oh. You know, and I think it's like, it's so easy to feel, you know, outrage on outrage, but I do feel fearful. And the day that it happened, I was more afraid about the next day and the next day and the next day, that I didn't know if this was just the moment where, you know, everyone was going to rise up with arms and, you know, just go loco at, you know, every point in the country. You know, they were saying, oh, there's people gathering around the state house, you know, in Colorado and in Sacramento. Right. And I realize Colorado is not a city, but that was what I was afraid of. And I think that there's going to be more coming out because they're saying that, you know, congressional representatives had given people tours the day before. And now they're saying that these two different congressional representatives got caught trying to bring firearms on the floor of Congress. And it's like, I need everybody who doesn't believe in democracy to go away now. And everybody else is going to go ahead and move forward with governance. It's like, I don't know. But yeah, I was re-listening to our episode, our New Year's episode. And, you know, I was like, oh, ladies, you have no idea what's about to hit you.
Bad news.
It's like, you know, if any of us were worried that people were going to stop paying attention to politics after President Biden was elected, you know, maybe this is just a sign that we're not going to be allowed to forget. Not that I want to, but there's more work to be done. You know, I think the executive orders that President Biden signed day one, I was reading articles over the weekend and people were like, oh, you know, Biden needs to act more quickly on XYZ. And I'm like, he's on day three, people.
Yeah.
You can't unstir the pudding. You know, it's like you've got to understand that there are consequences. You can't just undo everything that was done.
Everything.
It's not that simple. You and I are turning into like a political podcast. We're going to have to change our name. Democracy à toi. Democracy à deux. Or adieu.
Adieu.
I don't speak French. I was trying to say for two, but then adieu also means goodbye.
Isn't that two? Oh, yeah. Adieu. A bit adieu.
Adieu.
All right. Let's get to some good news then.
Can we talk about one Michelle Obama serving Lux at the inauguration?
I mean,
oh, hair did, nails she's always did, everything been... did. She looked so fine.
She's very fierce. She's always been pretty fashion forward, I want to say. She's a bit of a fashion icon, right?
Her stylist, I think her name is Meredith Coons. Apologize to the real Meredith Coons if that is not the woman's name. Called the color Winterberry Plum. And the comment that she made on Instagram that I will admit I didn't read on Instagram. I read it in an article about Michelle's outfit. she said, we knew that women were wearing purple as a show of blue plus red unity. But that's not what this was about. This was about Michelle, you know, looking good, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah. Michelle's got that Netflix money. She doesn't need to be bipartisan. She just needs to look good. And that moment where they were so dramatically having those officers pull the doors open at the same time.
Yes.
And I thought Kamala's stepdaughter, Ella, with her brother, she like came like, step in her cute little like nerdy coat that everybody loved.
Yes.
And it was like everybody was getting this moment, and I don't know if you could hear the crowd, but when Michelle walked out, everyone was like screaming. Very well deserved. She just looked so good, and the fact that she was wearing pants, I was like, oh, Michelle, you survived, you thrived.
She did. She can do anything.
Who else is standing out for you that day?
The amazing Amanda Gorman. The poet. Oh. Yeah.
Dude. Amanda. I wonder if we can, let's play some audio of that because it was just so good.
She's amazing. I was like, oh, she's so sweet. Like, how old is she? And I Googled her. She's 22. She went to freaking Harvard. I'm like, oh, Lord. So I was very surprised, but she was amazing and so inspiring, and I was just like,
this is great. It was humbling because I felt like she had the most important words of the day. And I don't know if you remember the Clinton inauguration. I was, as a young woman, a huge Maya Angelou fan.
Yes.
And I remember her reading at the inauguration, and Marie, I don't remember a word of it because it's a very beautiful poem, but it was nothing like Amanda Gorman's words, which were just so compelling and so of the moment. And she had a couple of Hamilton references, and the whole thing was just unbelievably inspiring.
I loved it.
I read a post on LinkedIn the other day, and this woman said, if everyone is so excited for Kamala and so wowed by Amanda Gorman, please make sure that you're also listening to and uplifting and respecting the Black women that are in your life. These are your colleagues. These are your coworkers. These are your neighbors. And I was like, oh, please preach, preach.
I love that. Yeah. Taking it back home.
Okay. And then can we just talk about the biggest meme to hit 2021?
Bernie, feel the burn.
Feel the burn.
Of course, stark contrast to Michelle Obama, Bernie did not give two fucks about what he was wearing. Just comfort and warmth with his cute little mittens that were like made by a teacher in Vermont, like the cutest thing ever. He went super viral, and the memes are hilarious. That his team even made sweatshirts and raised a ton of money for Meals on Wheels. Like, they sold out. just Bernie memeing it up, making money for Meals on Wheels. And I saw that Topps, the sports card company, has a whole inauguration line, Amanda Gorman among them. But Bernie made the cut, and his Topps sports card, I pre-ordered one for my brother because he collects baseball cards.
That is amazing. I haven't seen that, but what I loved about the meme was that it was so safe. You know, it's like America's grandpa, like,
totally
with his drip, like sitting with those mittens, like so ridiculously crossed. And then it was like literally everybody was using it.
Everybody.
And that was why it felt so funny, is that it wasn't making fun of him. It was like something that we all got to like pass around the circle, you know, sitting around the fire. It was like we'd all witnessed it and we were all appreciating it. I mean, like, yeah, you know, I work in the wine industry and people were putting it on their Instagram of like, you know, him sitting at like the tasting room or stuff like that, where it was just like
it.
So deeply innocent and pure and funny. And it just, I don't know, it just felt like a very safe, very happy moment. It's going to be something that, you know, you and I are going to be having lunch indoors somewhere a year from now, enjoying each other's company in real life.
Yeah.
Someone's going to walk by with a Bernie sweatshirt and we're going to see it.
Oh,
we're going to
totally
remember that moment.
Oh, Bernie.
I love it. Any other parting thoughts on the inauguration specifically?
Yeah, this is kind of a dig at Trump. I heard that one of Trump's biggest hangups was that Hollywood had never embraced him, even after The Apprentice, which was a pretty successful show. And even after becoming president of the United States, he just never got the respect that he felt he deserved from Hollywood. Why? I don't understand. But so he never got over that snub. So I feel like the inauguration, the star-studded inauguration, and the special that was that evening, hosted by one Tom Hanks, celebrating America, was just like a big F you to Trump, like on his way out. Like, okay, this is who you had at your inauguration, and this is who Biden brings in, like the big guns.
I feel like he brought it on himself a little bit, because we had to learn how to do that for the Democratic National Convention, that it had to go digital because we were not able to have it in person because of COVID. And I'm like, sorry, you know, what do they say? Don't pick a fight with someone who buys ink by the barrel. Like, you want to have a nice, like, beautifully produced Hollywood production, and they have to learn how to do it for the Democratic National Convention. Guess what? They're going to do it again for the
They're
going to
do it again. Heck yeah.
Are you at all surprised how often the words Tom Hanks have come up on this podcast?
A lot. And his children as well. We've talked about his kids. So
thanks, Atois. Every Big episode fan. We're just gonna rename the podcast to whatever the main theme of that podcast is.
Yeah.
Obviously this podcast theme is Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Pivot. We're doing a hard pivot, guys. Halfway through the season. Hard pivot.
Well, and I love that it was at the Lincoln Memorial. I got to go there a few years ago. I hadn't ever been to DC, and then I got to go there when I was in graduate school for like a summer session. And
amazing.
I remember standing in the Lincoln Memorial, and then later that night walking past it, because we had gone to an event and we were, you know, like, oh, let's cut through, and seeing it at night, I remember getting really choked up. And like, I don't know why, but I really have always loved Abraham Lincoln, even when I was little. I think the like mythos of him being, you know, this hayseed from Illinois. I don't know what it was about him. I was like obsessed with him.
Nice.
Do you have a favorite president, Marie?
I think it's a lot of people's JFK.
Oh, love it. Classic. You're a classy lady.
This is very morbid, but I went to Dallas a few years ago with my mom, my grandmother, and an uncle and a cousin. We like made this trek because my grandma, like, it was on her bucket list. She wanted to go to Magnolia. She wanted to go to see Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Farm.
Okay, anyway.
Or towers, water towers. What are they? She wanted to go to Waco.
A home reality TV phenomenon. Anyway, we spent a few days in Dallas, and I booked us a trip. So there's this gentleman who does this tour. It's pretty morbid. He has like a replica car of the car JFK was traveling in the day he was shot. I don't know why I'm laughing. And
I'm afraid of what you're going to say right now.
So you hire this man and you can do the tour and the parade route of like before he was killed. And then he pulls over to like the parking lot where JFK was supposedly shot from. And he tells you like the deep state, all the facts and the crazy, like, you know, very sort of scary conspiracy theory. But I was like this guy does this. He has the replica car, he does the parade route with you in it and tells you all these facts. And then I was like, I have to book this. It was kind of morbid, but we did it and it was amazing.
Okay, I have the following questions.
Yes.
Where did you find this?
I think I was just, where did I find this?
I don't someone know told us if you googled.
Maybe I didn't Google it. Somebody told me about it, and then I looked it up.
Okay.
Somebody, like a local, told me about
it. Got
it. I don't know how. Yeah. They're like, you want something really creepy.
Oh, is the top down in the car while you're doing this tour?
Yes.
Third question.
Yes.
How did it feel to book a tour with your mother and your grandmother, where you were getting into a vehicle with a stranger who you knew was a JFK conspiracy theorist? Like, were you afraid you were never going to get out of that car?
When he pulled over to, like, in the shade, because it was Texas in, I don't remember, probably, like, August. So it was nice and warm. So we had to find, like, a shady spot. But, yeah, we were there for quite a while, and yeah, exactly. We were there for a while, and I was like, "All right, I was like, "Grandma, are you getting tired? We should probably wrap this up, right? Like, you want to head back to the hotel for a nap? Sounds good.
Time to go.
Sounds good, Grandma. Let's go, Jerry."
Yeah, I also could not come up with the word convertible, so I literally just had to Google car with top down.
Top down.
That's the intellectual giant that you are talking to today. I guess if it had been a van tour, you could have been a little more concerned. But with a convertible, you could have just, like, hopped out at any time.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I'm into it. I think I've shared with you before, one of the creepiest things I've ever done was I walked through the catacombs in Paris, which is, like, something ridiculous, like 30 yards underground. It's something stupid. It's very far underground. And it's just stuffed with bones. While I was doing it, I am a little bit claustrophobic and you have to walk down this really tight spiral staircase. And while I was doing it, I was like, you are going to inhale something that is going to turn you into a zombie and you are going to fucking deserve it, because what are you doing? This is disgusting. And whenever people go to Paris now, I'm like, oh, you got to go to the catacombs.
You got to check out the catacombs. What are your fears? Do you have fears? I wonder what the fear of bones is. There's got to be like a fear of bones.
Ossophobia.
Oh.
No, I'm just making that up because it's called an ossuary, which it refers to bones, like osteopathy. But let's do this. You share your biggest fear with me and I'll share mine with you. And then let's plan a tour itinerary around it.
Oh my God. COVID.
We'll get Bernie sweatshirts. We'll make a fear itinerary. And we will just, it'll be like exposure therapy.
I love it.
No, that's actually pretty cool. I feel like getting to do tours is a very clever thing to do when you visit cities, especially somewhere like Dallas, where you're not going to go on like brewery tour of Dallas. It's like, what is Dallas known for? Actually, Dallas has amazing art. I got to go to an art museum there. That was really neat. But Patti Smith, who I'm like obsessed with, she's a singer, writer, poet, you know, became super famous in the like late 60s, early 70s. Every time she goes to a city that is like sort of prominent. She will visit someone famous's grave. She's like really into visiting graves, but like she's visiting, you know, like Baudelaire's grave. You know, she's visiting Sylvia Plath's grave. And that is also super creepy, but also kind of cool.
That's really
cool.
So
maybe you should go on a murder tour of every city you visit from here out. Ooh. And I will tour boneyards. And then we'll go to the coolest kids in class. Why doesn't anyone want to hang out with me? I'm going to the boneyard again. This took a real time.
I love it.
Thank you for indulging me on that little tour.
You're welcome. It was
weird. Well, I am super hopeful for this next chapter in America. I do feel like, you know, the work is ahead of us. I think it's like that lady was saying, it's the everyday experience of continuing to really dismantle our white supremacy. And I also just love opening my news app and reading good news. You know, I mean, with a swipe of the pen, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. got rid of the transgender ban for the military. You know, it's like there are things that I think can get fixed that quickly. Not that they didn't cause deep damage, but can get sort of set back up. And that is what I'm really savoring and really celebrating.
And he's being a good example. Oh. Like he's wearing masks when he's in front of the camera. He's when he's around other people. it's the little things that are getting me excited.
Love it. I love it. We're gonna end this one on a high note. High note applause.
Yeah, girl.
Until next time, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Mr. President, Dr. Biden, Madam Vice President, Mr. Emhoff, Americans and the world. When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. In the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. We, the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother, can dream of becoming president only to find herself reciting for one. And yes, we are far from polished, far from pristine, but that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We are striving to forge our union with purpose, to compose a country committed to all cultures, colors, characters, and conditions of man. And so we lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know to put our future first. We must first put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. We seek harm to none and harmony for all. Let the globe, if nothing else, say this is true. That even as we grieved, we grew. That even as we hurt, we hoped. That even as we tired, we tried. That we'll forever be tied together, victorious. Not because we will never again know defeat, but because we will never again sow division. Scripture tells us to envision that everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. If we're to live up to our own time, then victory won't lie in the blade, but in all the bridges we've made. That is the promised glade, the hill we climb, if only we dare it, because being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it. We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it, would destroy our country if it meant delaying democracy. And this effort very nearly succeeded. But while democracy can be periodically delayed, it can never be permanently defeated. In this truth, in this faith we trust, for while we have our eyes on the future, history has its eyes on us. This is the era of just redemption. We feared it at its inception. We did not feel prepared to be the heirs of such a terrifying hour, but within it we found the power to author a new chapter, to offer hope and laughter to ourselves. So while once we asked, how could we possibly prevail over catastrophe? Now we assert, how could catastrophe possibly prevail over us? We will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be, a country that is bruised, but whole, benevolent, but bold, fierce, and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation, because we know our inaction and inertia will be the inheritance of the next generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain. If we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change our children's birthright. So let us leave behind a country better than the one we were left. With every breath from my bronze pounded chest, we will raise this wounded world into a wondrous one. We will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the West. We will rise from the wind-swept Northeast where our forefathers first realized revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the Midwestern states. We will rise from the sun-baked South. We will rebuild, reconcile, and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country. Our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light, if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
Wow. How's that for a national debut?
This has been Garage à Trois. Thanks for listening.